Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello and welcome to the PreparedX Podcast. Just before I get started, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the way of the International Crisis Management Conference. As you know, PreparedX every year sponsors the conference. This is the fourth annual conference, and it'll be held on April 30th through to May 2nd of 2019. So it's 3 days this year. So we're looking forward to that. The main speaker event is May 1st, when PreparedX will where PreparedX will have a booth. So we hope you can join us. If you go to crisisconferences.com/conference, that's crisisconferences.com/conference, you'll find out all the information about this year's event, bigger than before. So we're looking forward to being a sponsor again at the event. So come join the event and come see us at our booth at the conference. Okay, this podcast, which is now episode 57, I interview Stuart Anderson, as well as James Barton of eTravel Safety. They have developed a comprehensive set of travel safety solutions for businesses, very good set of solutions on the training and awareness side. I've seen them, seen the solutions. They are very good. And we spoke about how they got started in the industry, as well as the various travel risks, as well as all things safety and security as it relates to the traveling employee. So I think you'll find this one interesting. Here's my interview with Stuart and James. Well, good morning from the States and good afternoon in the UK to Stuart and James. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Rob.
Yeah. Just before we get started, for our audience, if you could just introduce yourselves and just talk for a few minutes about your career to date, please.
Sure. Well, I'm Stuart Anderson. I'm the CEO of eTravel Safety, and along with James, one of the co-founders. So my industry, or my background, was very much initially in the military, and then worked in protection as a security specialist. I've worked and operated in 50 countries around the world, protecting people or either training them to go to these environments. Wanted to move with the times and realized that I needed to step into the use of technology, hence met up with James. A snapshot of my background, but very much I'm the what we'd class, I don't necessarily like the word specialist, but I'm the one with the security background who has been instrumental in focusing on that side within the business.
Great, thank you. James? Okay.
Great. And my name is James Barton. So I'm the CTO, the Chief Technical Officer for eTravel Safety. And I do not have a security background at all. My background is in technology. I am 100% nerd.
I confirm that.
But also in learning and development. So, you know, when I first met Stuart and we were talking about business ideas, it seemed a very logical connection. You've got somebody who is trying to get across all of his expertise in a way that he knew that it needed to be done differently. So we got together, got our heads together, got a blank sheet of paper, and we created eTravel Safety.
Well, that's great. And I know our audience are pretty keen on all things risk preparedness. So this one, I'm sure, will be well received. So I guess you've touched on it slightly, but if you could expand on how you got into the travel security business initially, especially from your background, Stuart, similar to mine in terms of, you know, it sounds like there's a military background there, but then, you know, you have pretty much an expansive experience in the field of, you know, traveling and protecting people. So could you expand on that a little further, please?
Yeah, sure. So I left the military in 2001, just before September the 11th happened. And the security industry as a whole was changing dynamically, particularly over in the UK then. And obviously there was a wider impact across Europe and the states of how people traveled, where they'd traveled before. They'd just gone at very high risk areas. They would have had protection, and most people didn't think really about their travel safety unless they were going to places like Colombia or high risk environments in the Middle East. So I was very heavily involved in protecting people. So I spent quite a long time on a diplomatic protection team, looking after a foreign prime minister, traveling around with him and his family, and many high net worth individuals, but more so people that needed protection, not necessarily wanted it because it was a status symbol. So you've got to have a good level of influence with these people on how they traveled. When they were traveling, they'd have protection, but they started looking at the senior management team. So say 2002, 2003, people say, okay, we're sending a lot of people traveling. How are we protecting them? So there was a few of us that were around, and we started developing some of the early personal security, travel safety or awareness courses where we'd go and spend between 1, 2, or 3 days with people and started to look at how they were traveling and what we could bring to their organization specific for them that would help their employees travel safely around the globe, whether they were oil crews or working in the field or working with part of the aviation team. They all had different requirements. We started developing ways to see how people could travel safely. And over the years, in between protecting people and providing the training, I realized that I couldn't be on a plane all the time. There was a limited number of people with our skill set,
sure.
And we weren't actually cost effective because we could only train a few people at a time to do it correctly. So I started looking at how we could take this forward, and I realized very much that the only way that you could provide travel safety for everyone, which is very much our vision, was through the use of technology, because there are not enough people with our background. And to put you on a plane and train someone, let's say an organization has 10,000 people, we yep. can't just get out and train them effectively.
Sure.
So we need to understand how technology is there. So realistically, I think you're looking, was it 15, 16 years specializing in this area, watching the evolution. It's been very good to see, and it's exciting time to see where is it's going now with the use of technology. What we're talking about now was not possible even 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So it is an exciting time for travel safety.
Great. Well, that's great information, great background. Let's start off. I'm sure there's different employers, right? There's those that understand it and want to invest. And there's probably less of those than there are of the other, you know, sizable group that, you know, probably don't provide enough in terms of the safety and security for their employees. So, you know, why should an employer then provide their workforce with, you know, that safe and secure travel experience? I'm sure there are many reasons, but if you can give us, you know, 2 or 3 of those, you know, core reasons.
I think the first one that everyone would spout would be a duty of care, the legal obligation to provide a safe working environment for your employees. And there is a duty of care legislation in over 52 countries around the world. So you can spout that, but there's also an ethical and moral obligation, I believe, in this day and age to start ensuring that you're ethically operating correctly. And to get away with, and I use the word get away with, because if people wanted to do travel safety 15 years ago, they would have put it in place. Because of the way the world has moved, with there have been successful cases where people have been taken to court and successfully sued for failing to provide a duty of care. But any organization doesn't want to have an ethical a moral impact on their business, where the reputational risk starts becoming very, very impacting. You can't. Everybody obviously looks at the value. What does this do to the value of the business? For a multinational to send an employee overseas, the worst happens to them, and they have a terrible lawsuit on their arm that they've got to deal with. That's a reputational risk that's going to impact their share price, and nobody wants that. But I think me and James were talking about something. You had some ideas around the retention side, didn't you, James?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's certainly from my background, one of the key challenges that a lot of organisations have is in around differentiation. And what I mean by differentiation is in attracting and retaining key individuals. Because any organization's key asset, and it's a bit cheesy, but their key asset are their people. And if you've got one organization that is looking after their people, making sure that they're traveling safely, and one company that's not, I know that for most of my peers, they will gravitate towards the people that are looking after them more than they will be that won't be. And I know from in my world, in my previous experience as a consultant, I've been dropped into Russia, China, Vietnam with absolutely zero training whatsoever. And you do feel very, very vulnerable. So I would have valued travel safety training and travel safety facilities that I never had when I was a consultant. And I know that when I've been speaking to my peers that also travel, they would have valued it as well.
I think that's very, very important. But also what we felt a few years ago is this wouldn't just come from top down. There would be a bottom-up drive. So one individual is getting sent to Saudi, let's say a 25-year-old media consultant going to Saudi, and they're getting sent over there, and they say, what are you providing for me? Nothing. Well, in my last business, they gave us some training. They gave us a brief. They monitored us when we were over there. Sure. I had a helpline. So I think not only will it come, or we are seeing it not only top-down, where organizations want to ensure that they're meeting their duty of care, they're ethically and morally operating, mm-hmm. but also the people who are going there go, well, actually, this isn't acceptable in this day and age. So there's a couple of things that we've looked at in the past is how do you protect a company and how do you raise the safety of the individual? And it should answer those two questions of whatever they're putting in place.
Sure. Yeah, that makes total sense. Talk to me about some of the most common risks that employees face when they travel. And obviously, well, I would imagine, and you know, looking for your experience here, it differs, right, from you know the individual. I'm sure there's lots of different circumstances, and maybe that's one of the challenges that some organizations have. But you know, can you talk about some of those more common risks that organizations and individuals face?
Yeah, it's interesting you say the more common risks because people think, oh, it's kidnapping or it's terrorism. That's probably one of the smallest areas they're going to face. The biggest risk when people travel, I would say, is road traffic incidents. Not just with their own driving overseas, not being aware or culturally aware or understand what they can legally do over there or how other people will drive, but just getting into a taxi. That taxi will, depending on where you're going, in India will be very different to getting a taxi in New York or London. So do they have MOTs? Do they have required standards that you would be able to drive with over here? No, they don't. It's very different. So every time you get in a vehicle, you're putting your safety in the hands of the people behind the wheel. You could be driving a very competent driver, but you're not taking into considerations what's happening or what other people are doing or how they drive. And it's different in each country you go to. What can seem like chaos can be normal to them, or even walking down the road and getting hit by a car. I would say that's the biggest problem most people are going to face. But I'd also throw in another factor, alcohol. So you take the normal civilized person goes away on a business trip, and they tend to mix now. Some you could talk of pleasure, business and leisure. Yep. Well, they finished a meeting, been quite stressful for a few days, traveling quite tired. They go to the local bar to have a drink. They like sampling the local culture. Let's have a look. Have they looked if that area is safe? Have they looked at the crime rates? Do they understand what people are doing to rob people, to take for attacks or assaults, anything like that? Is that happening in the area? How are they going to get back? Is there a taxi to do that? And I found that a lot of times where I've been training people, they've started with, we were in a bar and we were just walking around this area and you'll never guess what happened.
Right.
It's quite interesting because you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that does happen. And normally there's one person, when we used to do a lot of the face-to-face training, there's normally one person that has been in the wrong place at the wrong time about 10 times. Now, there's a common factor there. It's that person. It's the way that they're going about things. So when I talked about alcohol, there's a huge awareness, and alcohol reduces what you would normally find acceptable or not, even with a few drinks, tired. So it's those would be the biggest problems that people would face. But definitely of an accident side, I'd say is road traffic incidents, and then awareness of where you're going. Always look into what is safe, not what has always been done. That doesn't mean because everybody went there before, that doesn't make it safe.
Sure.
You might have been there five times before and say, I've never had a problem. It could be the sixth time that you get attacked.
Right.
So it's just really having a good awareness of everywhere you go. And I think the biggest point that I say on the awareness is having respect. We are visitors in the people's countries we're going to. So we need to respect their customs and cultures, respect how they behave and how they should expect us to behave. Because a lot of incidents that have happened in bars have been people are not understanding the cultural changes and causing offence.
Yep. Yeah, makes total sense. Yeah, I've travelled with a fair amount of U.S. companies to overseas locations, and you know the different policies in terms of you know what to do once you land and how to get to the hotel. You know, I've had everything from it being well organised in terms of having a service provided. You know, again, depending on which country you're going to, is the level of service.
Yep.
All the way through to, oh, no, I'll just turn on my phone and get a local Uber or, you know, the local Lyft, you know, ride or just jump in a taxi. So is that what you find as well in terms of the organizations that you've experienced this with?
Yeah, I've experienced, as you say, complete chaos to the most... smoothly run drop-off and pick-up procedures.
Yep.
But what I would say is if a person is arriving in another country not knowing what their company's procedures are, there's a breakdown and there's a failing there. If they don't know what is their company policy on how do I get into the taxi, what is the which do I use licensed cabs? Can I use any? Is there one pre-booked? As you say, do I just... There's an unlicensed taxi at the end of the end of the airport, but there's no queue, so it's quicker. Yeah. What does the company say on that? Or if they're being met by, let's say they hold quite a prestigious position within an organization, is there a driver waiting with a big board with their name and the organization?
Yeah.
How are they getting picked up? So these are little things that if they know and if they have planned... It makes a huge difference on their safety. If they just turn up and then start trying to, oh, have I got data? How do I call? What's the number? Has anybody got it? That's probably going to signify what the rest of their trip is going to be like. Because that's probably one of the key areas. They're tired. They've got off potentially a long flight. They arrive in another country, maybe for the first time, and they don't know how to get into the hotel. That's one of the bigger problems. People say to me, oh, I'm going to this location, it's brilliant, security all around it, and I feel safer, as safe as I can be. Okay, how are you getting there? Well, I never thought of that.
Right.
So, yeah, there's more factors to consider. But good planning, effective planning is key. And making people aware, and there's easy ways that we can talk about more with James on the technology, how we keep people informed of what's happening and what they need to do. It doesn't mean that they have to spend a day's brief. Now when you get out, you'll be met by these people. It's just having a simple plan and making that plan available in the way that people do life. How do they check messages? How do they read social media? What do they have available to them that helps them plan their trip where they haven't got to memorize a 13-day itinerary?
Right. Yeah. That's good information. Can we talk about the cyber or digital risk? Is this a serious factor in your opinion? And if it is, can you provide an example of where, you know, a traveler has been exposed, you know, on the cyber front?
Okay. Well, I think that's probably going to sit in my camp. And I say you've got to split these into two different areas. Is cyber or are cyber attacks a real threat? The answer 100%. If you think about the way that certainly in, for example, the UK and America, our infrastructure is run, if there was a cyber attack, someone could cause absolute havoc on with transportation. Simple things like traffic lights or disruption of dispatch for emergency services. You just have to look at it's a bit of a stretch from cyber, but look what happened to Gatwick the other week with drones,
right,
that are threatening the airport. Absolutely, cyber is a real threat. But one of the interesting ones that you mentioned and got me thinking was around digital attacks. And I give you an example, going on from the conversation we were just having there about, you know, you arrive at an airport and you've got an email probably that tells you a little bit about who's going to come and pick you up. It is incredibly easy for me to spoof an email to you that could give you the wrong information. I could quite easily pretend to be your organization, send you a message. You've seen these phishing attacks that look like they're official emails from other organizations. If I send that to somebody that says, you need to be looking for this company with this name on it, you could easily get into the wrong taxi or get in the wrong driver and be taken off to goodness knows where. So the answer is absolutely these are a threat. And we do need to be making sure that our people are equipped and prepared against those attacks.
Sure. Yeah. I see that being, especially for, you know, those organizations, you know, carrying IP, you know, into China and into other countries, which, you know, are obviously looking to, you know, to gain that advantage. And I certainly see organizations taking measures, for protecting their laptops and going through additional measures to protect, you know, the data that they carry with them. So I think that's certainly a big challenge for some organizations who don't understand, you know, how serious that risk is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just take, for example, what's happening in New Zealand in terms of the data that you take through. They have every right to access that information. So people are now going in. Some people's advice is go with no data and download it when you get there.
Right.
And then what that does is raise the awareness of the security professionals saying, well, why haven't you got anything on your machine?
Right.
You should have.
Right.
And so you kind of get this reverse impact. So, yeah, it's something to be very, very mindful of, very mindful.
Great. So in terms of using technology then, and I'm sure this is going to land back in your lap, James, in general, can you talk about the benefits or go into some detail about using technology to help employees prepare for traveling, more securely?
Yeah, well, I guess one of the key things around technology is accessibility. So, you know, our vision statement at eTravel Safety is travel safety for everyone. And the problem has always been traditionally that it's very expensive to deliver training and preparedness and risk assessments to using traditional methods. We know organizations that have a team of people writing risk assessments. They try and get people away from their jobs into rooms to give them training. That is, in this day and age, that is just not scalable. And what happens is you get a very, very small percentage of a large organization that is prepared, that is trained. It tends to be the more senior individuals. So one of the benefits of using technology is we can get the tools into the hands of every single individual. And with the majority of people now becoming millennials or below in terms of the way they operate, they want, and this will go back to Stuart's point about bottom up, we are working with organizations that are saying, unless you are providing this on a mobile device, we don't want to know. So it's because it's about relevancy as well as accessibility. We did a lot of work on a particular part of our services around training, where I listened to Stuart, and you know, Stuart's got a very military background, and he was saying words that I just didn't understand. And he's been used to training developing people using these military terms that actually most people don't understand. So we stripped all of that away. The great thing about technology is once you do it once, you've done it for everybody. So when you update a video or maybe a control measure or something on those lines once, we can roll that out against everyone. So we get consistency. Stuart will tell you that when training people face to face, you get one trainer that's very, very good and you'll have a fantastic experience. But the next group of people may have a different trainer and have a very different experience. Would that not be true, Stuart, from your side?
Yeah, it was always, everyone's got their little nuances of how they deliver. And an organization, as you'd know, Rob, they are getting sold a security professional, and this person turns up, they don't know who, how good they are or what they're going to do, or are they going to gel with the audience? And even I'd found before that how I would deal with one organization could be different to the next. And then I would end up tailoring it. Now, does this third organization need it the same as the first or the third? Whereas the use of technology, we can get the main points across exactly how we want, and that can be just rolled out on such a huge level. It's not a case of it's replaced the face-to-face trainer, because the face-to-face trainer was not able to provide travel safety training for everyone. It was historically board senior management or people going to the very high risk areas, and it missed your average person traveling to Paris who could end up in the wrong location because they weren't aware they didn't go into that area.
Right.
So it's not replaced like for like. It's just completely superseded it and taken it to another level, and it's got the consistency throughout.
Right. So
we talk about training. We talk about that from a training perspective, but also technology allows us to do some other very interesting things. So, for example, we do individual tailored risk assessments for people. You can't do that without the technology, because it allows us to do things very, very differently. The fact that we can geofence an area and send alerts that may impact people's travel quickly and immediately, that technology is driving a better level of safety for everybody around these areas. You couldn't do that without technology. We had an organization with their people were caught up in the Westminster attack.
Yep.
And they had to physically phone around everybody to try and find out whether they're safe or not. Now, that's not acceptable. They were hours before they contacted everybody.
Yep.
But with the use of technology and some of the software, the likes that we provide, you could do that instantly in seconds.
Yep.
So that's another thing. So we can talk about training, but there are other elements around technology that are so important.
Yeah, it fascinates me when we run these crisis simulation exercises and we talk about, you know, the simple activation of the management team when an event starts to unfold. And some organizations still in 2019, although this was last year, 2018, some organizations still, you know, find that very difficult to bring together 10 or 15 individuals who are responsible for, you know, starting to manage an event. And there's been technology out there for, you know, certainly since after 9/11, that has been able to, you know, easily by the press of one button almost nowadays to activate that team.
There's so many different options around, as you say, since 9/11. A lot of these have been in the marketplace. I think the clever bit is bringing them all together, because you can end up having so many different apps or so many different crisis management, travel safety, that it becomes quite hard to use. So when James spoke about cost-effective, scalable and easy to use, that's not just for the user, it's also for the organization.
Sure.
Because as you say, you bring those key people around, they need information and they need it straight away. So most people will say, there's been an incident, what do you need to answer? Where are my people and are they safe?
Yep.
Those are the first things you need to find out. And as James said, there was, I think that organization had about 137 people in London, and it took them the best part of a day to locate their people.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be happening. So before they can even answer those questions, they're spending a day looking, where an organization that's put something effective in place can sit down and then start saying, okay, we have four people in this area, two that are at the scene and we've been unable to get in contact with, but we know they were there. This is what we need to put in place, and this is what we're following up. So you can at least plan, or at least there is nobody in the affected area.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Let's make sure nobody travels into it.
Sure.
So, yeah, as you say, you need that information, that technology is there to be able to make people's life far easier.
So let's, as we start to wrap up here, guys, let's specifically talk about e-travel safety. And, I think you've highlighted a number of the areas where the product or your service, you know, the products that you provide within the realm of the apps and the different videos that you provide. Why are they different to other products that are currently in the marketplace?
Do you want me to answer that, Stu, or you?
Go on, James. James came from outside the industry. You know, I've been in it a long time, so it was very good to see his view from someone outside of this industry looking in. So go on, James.
If we break it down into maybe three areas, the way that we're looking at doing training is very differently. So we've removed face-to-face. We put it all into a mobile app that allows us to deliver video on demand and critically connect that to an individual risk assessment. So traditionally, and Stuart, chip in here, I get this wrong. I think I got this right. Traditionally, most people risk assess a country. But as we've discussed on this call already, the three of us will have very, very different levels of experience and therefore risk. I mean, Stuart and yourself are trained military professionals. I'm an overweight, middle-aged man that could have barely run to the end of the road. My level of safety is different to you guys, but people don't assess that risk. Our software is the world's first and only individual risk assessor for the individual that's traveling. And equally, we can now provide the training, not as a full course. What we do is make sure we are only providing the training that is relevant to that individual. For example, we have specific courses or specific videos on how to travel as a female. It's not relevant to me because I'm a man. So we focus in on making sure that the right content, the right training is delivered to the right person at the right time, using technology based around that individual's exact risk. And also, I'll go a stage further. We've also very recently launched something called Chatbot Charlie. Chatbot Charlie is the world's first travel safety chatbot, and it works in a very, very different way than most technology, in as much as you can ask it a question and it'll respond to you. So where normally when we're doing training and development, you as the organization are giving the information to the traveler.
Yep.
This is turning it on its head. And what we're doing is we're saying, okay, traveler, you ask us the questions that you've got in on your mind.
That's great.
The first question could be, where are you traveling to? You may, for example, you might say Germany or Japan. It'll then go get live risk data and then provide you with the relevant training videos based upon those individual risks for that country. So we just turned it on its head.
Stu, nice.
I think that's spot on. You've done a great example there. And the benefit we had is we sat with a blank canvas. So we took my travel safety experience, we took James's technology experience. How do we provide travel safety for everyone? So we didn't have to evolve a product. There's some great products out there, great travel risk management companies that have been in the industry for many years. But if you were to look at how you use your phone on a day-to-day basis, how you interact with people, how you communicate, how you learn. Even on Facebook, when you look on social media, if there's a few seconds it's not gained your interest, you've gone. So the days of long drawn out training or just press and click, they don't work. People don't want to look at that
Sure.
approach now. They want something on demand. If I'm if there's a pregnant traveler going to Mexico, they need to look at training specific for a pregnant traveler, specific for kidnap Mexico, and we can tailor it we do tailor it for that person. And the highlight that James said is you can get country risk ratings. So many organizations have this.
Yep.
But that's saying 100 people going to Paris, they've all got the same risk rating. No.
Oh, right.
They've got different risk profiles. They've different experience. Some speak the language, where you're staying, how you're traveling, what you're doing, your health. They're all factors that adjust your risk up and down. And that's where we've been able to use artificial intelligence to adjust that for the individual, specific for them. But it updates as they're going. So by the time someone's on a flight, the old traditional travel risk assessment could have been out of date because of what's changed in the country. Technology and our system keeps that updated and keeps it fluid. So it's exciting to be able to take travel safety far beyond what I ever could as an individual when I was protecting or training someone, because I'd see them once a year, I'd be with them for a week, whereas now we've got the ability to put hundreds of thousands into millions of people around the world to have what they need on their phone. And I think there's one final thing that I'd love to throw in about tracking. So tracking has been the go-to solution for many people over the years.
Yep.
And we sort of countered it. And so tracking in the military, you're trying to find the bad guys. So they took that that style of software. Let's track our people. We don't need to find them. We know we're sending them to that country. You don't need to follow a load of breadcrumbs to watch him where they're going. You need to know where they are at a point in time. So we took away tracking, because a lot of organizations will just provide a tracking solution. That is a measure that you put in place to counter a problem that they might face. You can't put that in place unless you first assess the individual's risk. Sure. It's like a plaster's great, but it doesn't treat malaria. Same sort of example there. So with tracking, we need to find, we took away the traditional tracking that drains the phone. I know there's some better solutions out there. It wasn't cost effective. And there's a whole host of privacy issues. A lot of corporate organizations don't want their people tracked.
Yep.
In an incident, do they want to know where they are? Yes. Well, press a button and you can locate your people.
Yep.
Rather than actually track them everywhere. Because what do you do? The biggest problem, when they used to use pre-phones, when they used to use trackers, they'd leave them in the hotel when they went out to the bar at night.
Yep.
People don't like to be tracked. So there was, we were fortunate to be able to sit with a blank canvas, and what we've produced now has been outstanding, and it's been brilliant of how it's been received in the marketplace, because we went there with the view of what does the industry need, not what is in there and how do we adapt that. So we went straight from the blank canvas that I think has been one of the biggest benefits we've been able to have. I think you'd agree with that, James?
100%. New wine is a new wineskins.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I think that's that's excellent. I think there's this right or wrong. You know, we come from this era of late 80s when certain organizations were all focused on the kidnap and ransom. Which was all blown out. It's almost like an industry was born because of kidnap and ransom. But like you say, it's we're more concerned about a vehicle not starting or some other issue with a person's individual dietary issues in a certain country because they can't get access to medication or whatever it may be. So that's really fascinating stuff, guys, and appreciate you taking the time out today. to be interviewed.
It's an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed being on here. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Any final comments? How can the listeners get a hold of you if they want to contact you?
Okay. So straight away, they can find us on social media, typing in eTravel Safety, or they can go on our website, eTravelSafety.com. We've got some great news and features and different articles that we've got on there. But we've got a big launch coming out in February this year, end of January, beginning of February, what's called Travel Safe 360. And it's the merging of multiple solutions that we've developed. Our plan was always to merge it into one app, every solution in one app. And that's that builds upon what we've got. So you can find us on very easily through the internet and have a look on our website, see our press releases. And if you want to have a play around with the software, get in touch. We'd be happy to take you through it.
Great. Well, again, thanks for your time today, Stuart and James, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. Take care.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
That wraps up episode 57 of our podcast series. I encourage you to please rate us on iTunes or any of the other outlets that you're listening to this podcast on. If you're listening to this via our website, please leave a comment underneath. If you like this, if you did, please leave us a comment. If you didn't, tell us why not. We'd like to hear your feedback and obviously share it with your network so others can benefit from it. Until next time, have a safe and productive day. Thank you.